You're listening to an Art Smitten podcast.
Thank you for chatting with us today about this exciting children's film festival. Before we get into that, I'd love to start with a bit about yourself and your journey to loving film and everything leading up to it. So I'd love to start with the importance of movies in your life. I'm guessing from an early age, they were a big part of you and your upbringing. What were some of the earliest memories you have of watching and appreciating movies?
Oh, boy. I mean, you're right. It's something that I was into from very early on. I remember, even very young, just recognising there was something special about cinema. And I'm pretty sure the first film I was taken to see in the cinema was a rerun of Disney's Peter Pan, which I tried to rewatch recently and was somewhat horrified by it. So my happier memory, it's dated horrifically. My happier memory, I think it was the second film I saw in the cinema, was E.T. the Extraterrestrial. And that just blew my mind with what a magical experience that could be. I mean, you know, it's exciting, it's funny, some of it's terrifying, and it's just so whimsical. And I remember, because I was sort of a child of the late 70s and the 80s, so it's when Steven Spielberg was dominating and the Star Wars films, or the original trilogy, were massive in the public consciousness. And we also had all the Jim Henson stuff. So I just hooked in fast. And originally I followed actors. Like, my hero was Harrison Ford. He was Indiana Jones and Han Solo. And then I started paying attention to credits. And I saw names like Steven Spielberg was often the producer or the director on some of my favorite films. And that sort of led me to sort of seeking out more and more films. And I remember even as young as maybe 8 or 9, I think I watched 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't quite get it. Parts of it I was a bit bewildered and distracted during. But I remember just being hit with this sensation of there's something more here than just entertainment as well. Cinema is something else. It can be soulful. It can be artful. I mean, these aren't ideas I had at the time, but it's something that I've since sort of developed. And then as a teenager, I took cinema frightfully seriously, and I think I've chilled out a bit more now, but I still do. I love it. It's still my passion.
It's interesting. And then for you, enjoying these artists, these directors and actors such as Harrison Ford, Steven Spielberg, and even the movie E.T. at an early age, when you look at those movies and filmmakers and actors nowadays, are you looking at them with a different set of eyes, in a way, if that makes sense, or you're looking at it in the same way you did back then?
That's such a tricky one, isn't it? That nostalgia trap. Yeah. I don't know if any of us have the ability to consciously detach from some of those films. It's been a long time since I've watched E.T., but I do remember the last time I saw it, I still felt that incredible sense of whimsy and magic. But I can't tell you whether that's because it's the film itself or whether that's my insane nostalgia kicking in. I mean, I still adore the film Goonies and think it's absolutely stunning, but I know people who watch it for the first time recently, they sort of roll their eyes and say, oh, gee, this is clunky. So it's really hard to detach. I think there are some timeless films. I think some of those early Spielberg films, I think the early Star Wars, the original Star Wars trilogy, I think they do still possess a certain power because they resonate from generation to generation. And I guess that's the test. It's, you know, I can also watch old Howard Hawks films or, you know, classics like German Expressionist films from the 20s, and they sort of blow my mind and I love them. And that's because these films just continue to resonate beyond the year they were made in.
Yeah, and I guess that does obviously highlight the importance of having these opportunities for younger people to come out and see movies and enjoy them and sort of have these experiences that might lead them to the same path that you were led down on. But before we get into the festival, one more quick question. Your sort of resume so far has taken you into so many interesting areas, reviewing, writing, and all the cool things. What's some of the things you've held on from all these different jobs that you've taken into this artistic director position? Is there little parts of each job that you feel like you are using in this role?
Look, it's sort of, I studied film academically when I went to university because that was my passion. I had no thought about how practical that might be. It's just what I wanted to do. And it took over a decade, no, about 15 years until I actually got a job that could use those skills. And that's when I started, you know, programming for the Melbourne International Film Festival. And it really consolidated for me how important it was to have studied film formally, to have really had a good appreciation. how essential it is to really open your mind up to the entire history of cinema, which is now over 100 years, and all the different nationalities of cinema out there. I mean, I'm not across everything. I've got huge blind spots in my viewing, which I'm trying to correct a lot of that this year, actually. I'm having fun watching classic films I've missed. But I think that's the one I think I've clung on to. If you really love film, if you're going to be a true cinephile, it's so important to be open to absolutely everything. I think some people close themselves off too much. So, you know, I don't watch black and white films, or I only watch English language films, or I only watch art house or mainstream. I just think and the people I tend to bond with the most are the same. They love the whole lot. Ideas about what film should be. They're open to it all. And that's something I've tried to maintain.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Sin listeners might be interested as well. What are some of the classic movies you've watched recently that you do recommend people find on some streaming service or DVD even or something? Anything in particular you've enjoyed?
Well, I've recently moved house after having stuff in storage. So I've been working through all these old DVDs I bought years ago and never watched. So a lot of the stuff I'm watching isn't available on streaming. That's the other thing I'm learning. I'm so glad I kept all my physical media because, you know, I watched something. What did I watch the other day? Sunrise, which I'd never seen. The 1927 silent masterpiece, which, yeah, unless you've got an imported Blu-ray or you can buy the DVD copy I've got secondhand, apparently. Yeah, it's a hard film to see. I'll tell you what I really loved I watched on streaming earlier this year was Broadcast News. So the classic Albert Brooks 80s comedy about the news, about working in a newsroom with Holly Hunter and William Hurt and I'm going to forget his name now, Albert Brooks. It's a film I've been wanting to see for years, but I was just so almost jumping out of my skin with excitement about how just damn good it was. The humour, the intelligence, the acting, it was just such a kind of sparkling, made for grown-ups comedy drama, the kind of thing we don't really see in cinema much at the moment. We get plenty of it on TV, but it was just so exciting to see this beautifully written, directed and performed sort of grown-up comedy drama. It's, you know, it wasn't heavy and serious, but it was made for adults. It wasn't a superhero film or a sort of, you know, mind-numbing rom-com. It was just a really smart script. And, yeah, that's available on streaming. So if you've never seen Broadcast News, I highly recommend that. Just a masterpiece.
Yeah, definitely. I do enjoy that. I just watched that the other day too. Yeah, one of the best movies ever. Cool. And I feel like it still holds up all these years on, which is amazing.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. And then you did bring up an interesting point there about the idea of streaming. And I feel like this film festival has done an amazing job in setting itself apart from streaming and giving these kids and families opportunities to catch things that they can't catch on one of the many streaming services or free to air or anything like that. I'd love to, if you could chat about that process a little bit. Was it a hard sort of slog, I guess, to make sure that you stood apart from all these streaming services? What was that like?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've sort of got the illusion of quantity and quality and abundance because of streaming, but it's really narrow. And it's also narrow what gets shown in Australian cinema these days as well. Again, so when I was coming of age cinematically, it was the 90s, and, you know, the multiplexes and the many, many art house cinemas showed so much more films from more parts of the world and retrospective films as well. It was, you know, I only really appreciating now how good I had it when I was at university. But what we find now is stuff that makes it onto streaming or even to broadcast, it tends to be from the same small handful of countries, and most of those are English speaking. You know, we miss out on a huge chunk of what gets made and shown around the world. So, yeah, so all festivals I've ever worked on, including this one, a key idea is let's bring to the cinema stuff that you wouldn't get to see otherwise. And a lot of these films, they're not going to pop up in cinemas or on streaming later down the track. They might, and some will, but a lot of these films, this is your only chance to see them. And, you know, there are countries all over the world that make loads of really good film and television for children and families and adults for that matter as well. So that was what, you know, that's what we did. And we looked at what the international film festivals are screening. We talked to the sales agents we have a good relationship with overseas. And just watch an enormous amount of stuff that, you know, is really good. And if we don't, you know, if it doesn't get seen in a festival like ours, it probably won't go seen in Australia. So presenting Australian families with a diversity of content was, you know, a real priority. And you know, and it's good stuff. I should really qualify that as well. It's not like this is sort of, you know, it's good for what it is. This is genuinely really fun, entertaining cinema and television that just gets sort of overlooked in the fairly conservative programming that happens for streaming and broadcast at the moment.
And then, so in terms of like acquiring these movies, is there any differences in acquiring one that doesn't come from an English-speaking country versus one that comes from Australia or the US? Is it the same sort of way you go about it, or?
It is. Look, we are very lucky. I mean, I'm very lucky as a typical Australian who doesn't have a background where I learned a second language properly or functionally. Most of the international film market uses English as the main language, so that there's no communication hassles. Everybody I deal with all around the world in every country speaks English. So international sales reps, yeah, we all speak the same language, which is always something I find humiliating when I realise I can't return the favour. But no, look, it's negotiating with the different agents. I mean, I mainly deal with people in Europe. Most of the main agents are based in Europe, a few in Asia and a few in North America. But even like, you know, a lot of South American content gets represented in Europe. I guess the only challenge is, I mean, I do this as a sort of on the side job. It's not my day job at all. It's because most of them are online when I really want to go to bed. So I'm often do a lot of late nights sending emails back and forth. Especially when, yeah, it's going to be crunch time and I really want to lock things in and confirm price and confirm conditions. It's sort of lots of emailing at 1 or 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then in terms of that, there's so many amazing films on this program, as we just discussed, from a variety of different venues and, from a variety of different countries and areas. Is there any film in particular you're looking forward to bringing your family to see? Any personal favourites you've got on the list?
Yeah, my favourite is a Norwegian co-production called Titina. Hang on, I'll just double check if that is a Norwegian. I know one of the... Yeah, no, it's not a co-production at all. It's a film from Norway called Titina, which I won't bring my family to it because I've already watched it, actually. I got a screener sent to me at home and I watched it with my 8-year-old son, which is kind of was a really helpful way to gauge its suitability because some of its themes are a bit heavier and I wanted to... which took me by surprise, but he was fine with it, so I realised, okay, great, this is suitable. It's a really beautiful animation based on a true story in the 1930s when an Italian airship engineer and a Norwegian explorer... teamed up to be the first people to reach the North Pole. And it's about that expedition, the rise of Mussolini and fascism is sort of in the background and Mussolini's in the film as a sort of character of contempt. And then it's about these two men and their egos going out of control and they have this huge falling out and disagreement about who could take credit. It's got a melancholic and sad ending, but it's such a... And these are the best kind of kids' films. It is so suitable and accessible for young people, but it has serious issues that have real, you know, real weight and worth to them. So it presents kids with some of these more complex ideas in a way that's palatable and doesn't insult the intelligence of adults in the cinema either. I mean, really, really special film. I like it a lot. And it's named Titina because that's the name of the dog that one of them adopts early in the film who goes on the expedition. And there's archival photos that are included in the film. So you do actually see the two real guys and then this, you know, and the real dog, which is very cute.
Amazing. That sounds very cool. And then that's an interesting thing as well that you bring up. Is it a process for you to make sure that the films that are represented in this program do sort of have this meaning for children? They're able to, like... get through to children and teach them something. Was that sort of a criteria, I guess, for making sure it's not eligible, but worth being on the list?
Look, it's one of them. To be absolutely honest, the main criteria is, are kids going to have a good time? Are they going to dig this film and enjoy it? Is it going to be entertaining? is it going to make people want to come to the cinema to see this film with their kids? So entertainment is at, that's probably the number one priority. We don't want to make a didactic festival that teaches lessons. But, you know, it's not a coincidence that the more higher quality films also have this kind of social consciousness or sort of, you know, ethical approach or sort of, you know, issues that are relevant to children behind them. I mean, so, you know, a lot of films are about overcoming adversity and resilience and friendship and family. They kind of go hand in hand, you know? But yeah, we're not necessarily looking for lesson films that impart a message, but sort of by default, a lot of them do because that's what the good films do.
Yeah, of course, that makes sense. And then you've been so generous with your time, so I'll wrap up with this one. And you did mention it there a little bit. What's some of the main things you hope families and children get out of coming to one of these sessions?
Well, I hope they have a really good time coming to these sessions to see something they wouldn't see otherwise. I think it's especially post-pandemic. I just, you know, I think a lot of us who adore film and work in the industry just want to create that cinema culture again and get that next generation excited again about going to the cinema, because it is different to watching stuff at home on streaming or even physical media. There is, you know, there is a kind of atmosphere and kind of sort of collective moment of experiencing a film together. So we want to introduce and give back that experience to families, as well as, yes, allowing them to see stuff that's really great that they're not going to be able to see otherwise. But yeah, we want families and kids to come along and just have a really good time in the cinema.
Yeah, of course. That's an interesting thing as well. I feel like a lot of people don't think about the idea of the movies aren't about like going out and paying money to go see a movie. It's about the idea of seeing something cool on a big screen with other people. And yeah, nothing can, as you would know best, nothing can sort of compete with that, can it?
No, and look, in some of the, I mean, I always say the best films to see with a crowd are comedies. So, you know, you get that collective laughter. Horror, there is nothing more cool than being in a film and everyone's kind of freaking out and giggling and shrieking at the same time. And kids' films. I love seeing films packed full of kids, hearing how they respond. And that's often the best barometer of how good a film is or not.
Yes, of course. Well, Thomas, thank you so much for your time today and diving into movies and all about this exciting new film festival.
An absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to an Art Smitten podcast. You can listen to Art Smitten live every Saturday from 12 p.m. on Syn.